One. Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD and to the season premiere of our bracket rundown shows. How's that?
Yes, brackets. I love brackets.
If you're a best college
Oh
baseball
boy.
fan, you love
Oh, good
brackets, and that's
gracious.
what this show tonight's going to be all about. We discuss standings and games and stuff on our other shows on Mondays and Wednesdays, but tonight we are actually going to be revealing a bracket. We'll get to the
Yes, we
format in a
are.
moment. Let me introduce who's here first. I'm Chad Sherwood, your host. To my sides, David Dorman and Matt Sikowski. Down below me, John Tytel is going to be the star tonight, and we'll get to that in a moment. To
What?
his sides, David Griggs and Brack from Bracketeer.org, it is Rocco Miller, if I can get all that out. I think John Sleek will be joining us here in progress in a few minutes. But what we did today, what we're going to be
Yeah.
doing during the course of the season, actually, with these bracket rundown shows, is we'll be
It's
either building
great what we did
brackets
today.
or
Jesus.
revealing them. We're not doing any type of consensus brackets for our first show of the season. Instead, John Tytel, who happens to be, where are you ranked nationally, John?
I'm seventh, but Rocco is ninth, so it's a two-man operation
Okay. We have the number seven, the number nine bracketologist in the world on the show here tonight. And I'm not joking about that. But
You
John,
got me
you
too.
released, and we got the and the number 999,999,000
Yeah.
and
He's
David
right next to Jerry
Griggs.
Palm.
He is. He's ahead of Jerry Palm.
Oh,
I
God.
had.
I think he watches. Oh, God. Oh,
Anyhow,
boy.
we love you, Jerry. We love you.
Yeah, we do.
Every week started around this time of year, Tytel, you release your seed list, at which we then bracket up on the website. And anybody that wants to cheat, your seed list is already out there on the website. But what we did was, I went ahead and actually bracketed up your seed list with those
Wait,
teams right
his
in their
seed list?
order.
What about my seed list? This was supposed to be my show. What?
Okay.
Okay.
Tytel, I bracketed up your seed list, and we're going to go ahead and reveal that one team at a time for the first 16 teams, and then one seed line at a time thereafter, just so we don't spend forever on the show. But here is that blank bracket, first of all. But Tytel, any thoughts before we start revealing teams that you want to share with anybody about putting this together or anything?
Sure. Nothing too fancy. As you might imagine, you're going to see a lot of SEC teams. No shocker. You'll see a couple of surprises based on yesterday's results. As I posted it this morning, you're not going to see anything that was affected by today's games, but obviously it changes every week. So stay tuned for the next 10 Sundays.
Yeah, a couple of notable games of the Kansas dominating win over UCF today, and Indiana's win at Penn State were not factored into these. Drake just suffered a loss today at home, also a bit of a surprising loss, honestly.
Yeah, I did have a sort of serious question. The way you do it, are you trying to guess what it will look like on Selection Sunday, or is it more or less a checkpoint for what you think it is now, or is it sort of a combination? Like, how do you do it? I know that you're trying to guess the committee, but are you trying to guess the one that you do in January, or are you trying to guess them in March? Are you trying to forecast the checkpoint for what they would do today?
Go with can't it be both? I mean, as
Yeah,
you might
okay.
imagine, I have some of the lone undefeated team in the nation now, very high in my poll, both because today in January they should be very high in the bracket, but I also think that in March they're going to be very high in the bracket. And I also have teams like McNeese. Do they deserve to be the best team in the Southland today? I think so. Will they be the best team in the Southland in 10 weeks? I think so.
Yeah, they probably will be.
Without further ado, let's go ahead and reveal the number one overall team. And it is not that lone undefeated team, but Dorman, let me start off with you. Is Tytel right by not having the undefeated Tennessee Volunteers here, but having Auburn, who does have a loss, number one overall?
I'm with Tytel. I had Auburn number one overall. I think the schedule was tougher. I think there's more impressive wins, although both of them are extremely impressive. But when you go down that Auburn, that tier one is just incredible. And Tennessee's got three, two on the road, which Auburn didn't have. So I went back and forth for a while. But in the end, I went with Tytel. I had Auburn, but Tennessee's two true road wins against that tier one is very impressive.
Another thing I would want to point out, and I think we would all agree with this, is the loss that Auburn does have was a tougher game to win than any of Tennessee wins. than any of Tennessee's wins. So you can't just assume Tennessee would have been able to win that when nothing they've done is harder than that. That is a, I, had they gotten that one, that's almost, it's harder to beat a Final Four team on their home court than it is to beat them in the Final Four.
And of course, he's talking about the loss at Duke. First of all, for anybody that's listening, especially, I have no idea what Griggs was just talking about. But Griggs, I got just say one comment here, Griggs. Auburn hasn't won a road game all season. I mean, I've known you for so these all these years here. You've never liked a team without a road win.
Well, I mean, I would still, I Auburn is so good, I'd still have them on my field.
I gotta say one more, Rocco. I mean, no road wins, but look, not only all those tier one wins, but they're all neutral court wins too, which is just amazing.
Yeah, it's all part of the scheduling strategy, and Bruce Pearl's caught on, done a good job with that. I think when Todd Golden and Chris Jans got hired a few years ago in this league, they were the first ones to start doing six neutrals. Now you see Auburn on board, Alabama's got a bunch, so that's now you're starting to see why, and you can play anybody you want at their level. That's why they have so many great wins. I think personally, it's like so early; it's not a big debate, but. Just the fact that Tennessee doesn't have a loss and that they have a road win at number five in the net, Illinois. That's the only thing that I bank on a little bit more at this point to put Tennessee number one.
Well, I understand that Illinois is number five in the net. Let me pull their profile up against Tennessee. But Rocco, I don't know that that's really the number five team in the nation profile by any means, though. That, yeah, I don't know that. I think that net's a little fake, almost, is what I'm kind of saying.
Well, the purpose of the net is to sort your opponent's data. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're the fifth best team. It just means you're the fifth hardest team to beat. So those are two different things, in my opinion. And they've done that on the road. And obviously, with Illinois' explosive results, that's why they're number five. They're a high volatility team with a lot of length, seventh biggest team in the country. And Tennessee got that win. Obviously, a close game, great game. But I think the other part of it, Chad, like I said at the start, is if you're perfect and you're the last perfect team and you're playing in the best league, in my opinion, you're de facto at the top until somebody knocks you off.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously Tennessee, at Florida,
It'll
at
happen.
Texas, their
So
next
yeah.
two games, it's not going to be easy here.
Yeah.
No surprise, obviously, that Tennessee team was number two overall. I don't think we've kind of discussed them already. I think maybe the best bet, though, is greater number three overall. And Matt, let me bring you in here. Titella to Iowa State, number three. Do you agree?
Probably, I could see putting Duke there also, but I'd probably maybe Iowa State's got probably a little bit better body of work as of now, and that one less loss. You got a road win and a Q1 road win, and then Marquette, even though I was home, that's still a team we're going to be calling pretty shortly here. And that's the six Q1 and 2 wins. I like that a lot. I think Iowa State definitely on the one line and probably should be here at number three overall.
All right. Well, Titella's going to get somebody to fight with you, but we're seeing a lot of agreement so far.
Well, like I kind of like Iowa State more than Auburn because I think they've got a much higher quality loss.
You like Iowa State better than Auburn?
Because I just think they've got a much better quality loss. The buzzer was not going to work.
I was a little slow on the trigger there on that one. But Stilica's with us as well today, as well, just jumped in here. And
Stilica got there just in time for that.
just in time for that. But Stilica, let me round out his Titel's one line. He had Duke finish out the one line. Do you agree, or do you think there's any mistakes here on the one line?
Well, initially, I think when I did my own bracket on Friday, I would have had three SEC teams on there, but with Florida losing at Kentucky, that breaks up a little bit of the SEC logjam right here. So clearly, I wouldn't have any problem with Iowa State and Duke rounding up the top line at this point.
Was that the thing, Titel? Was the Florida loss what knocked them off the one line?
Pretty much. And it's hard to say that when you score 100 points against Kentucky, I don't know that you should be penalized, but when you give up 106 to anybody, you should. And a quick note about Duke. I thought about moving them up one, maybe even two, just because the X factor in those two losses was that they were missing Isaiah Evans. one of their great shooters who scored 18 points when they beat a little team called Auburn. But he's been inconsistent, so I think that even though they missed him for both of Duke's losses, I don't know that he's a huge X factor just because he's been so inconsistent.
I don't think that was an injury, too. I think that was a DNP coach's decision.
Touche. I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just start it in the two line here. And the top team to miss to the next team up would have been Alabama. Rocco, is Alabama correctly on the two line instead of the one line even at this point?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
it's a good exercise. I think there's a good argument for Iowa State and Duke. I'm good with what Tytel's got so far. I was actually just comparing Alabama and Marquette, and that was a tough decision. But if they're both twos, I think we're in good shape.
And probably not for where they want to go. That shouldn't affect it, I don't think.
There were some bracketing issues with all these SEC teams here. For example, you see Alabama over there in the East. We already have SEC teams here in the South and the Midwest. It was either the East or the West for Alabama at this point early on. And next SEC team has to be in the West region at this point.
Yeah,
that's just a bracketing exercise, though.
Yeah, my God, what Alabama did to what I thought was a pretty solid Oklahoma team. Goodness.
Well, number six overall was Marquette. Probably no surprise here. The two teams we were just discussing as debating. Matt, you are a Marquette guy, so let me go back to you for another second here. Any other thoughts on that?
No, that's one. I think, yeah, even probably Duke. I think 4 through 6 is pretty close right now, but I would give Duke the edge and probably have it roughly in this order. And then even projecting down road, I think Alabama is going to get a 2 seed in that we're going to see another SEC team here shortly that I'm not quite sure will be a 2 seed at that point. But yeah, 1 through 6, I think I'm pretty sure this is where they're going to land come March too, even. Good chance. I mean, Marquette would have to probably go something like 18-2 in the Big East to get a 1 seed.
Dorman, let me bring you back in. Number 7 overall, off of that win, how about Kentucky on the 2 line?
I have Kentucky on the 2 line.
Okay.
As well. I have no argument there. It was real tight with Florida. I had Florida and then Kentucky, not to ruin the next team. But you could go either way. Yesterday, there was a matchup in Lexington. Kentucky got away with the victory, so I see where it leans there right now. But coming into that game, I leaned a little more to Florida, but it's tight.
Yeah.
Tytel, was that the deciding factor here, kind of between a Kentucky or a Florida, especially, you know, given that I think the metrics seem to favor Florida still at this point?
I do love my undefeated teams, Chad. So when you ruin an undefeated team's streak, I give that a lot of weight. Also, if you look at Tier 1, I mean, I don't know if Duke, Gonzaga, Florida, I think that's one of the best in the nation, right?
Yeah.
Up there. Maybe not quite Auburn, but it's pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to get past that.
Yeah. Number 8 overall. Not quite Florida yet, even.
Wow.
Even. We've already seen there we go. Kentucky in the West region. That was our fourth SEC team already. But Salika, how about the Ducks coming in here on the 2 line?
Oregon had gotten off to a pretty decent start. Now the Big Ten has apparently started to figure out the Ducks, at least in Eugene, which is a little bit unusual. One thing for UCLA to get a close win because they're going to have some familiarity with them. We did not see Illinois blowing them out, which probably says Illinois is going to be pretty high on this bracket as we get a little bit further into the podcast right here. But as far as what the Ducks have done, wins against Alabama and Texas A&M is going to help punch their ticket.
Yeah, and that Oregon win over Maryland today was not even factored in this, and that even makes the profile a little bit better. That is now a fifth Tier 1 win, albeit at home.
Yeah.
Actually, their first home Tier 1 win.
Yeah, and that was a big one because, I mean, Illinois is a good team. You're not going to get dinged too much for that in and of itself, but they didn't just lose. They just, on their own home courts, got blown into the sun. I think that that was one of the more surprising results of the season, not because of who won, but because of how badly they beat a really good team, as we all seem to agree. Even if you don't think they're a two seed, I don't see having them any lower than a three by 22 at home. Protected seeds never lose at home to anyone, much less by that margin. It's very, very unusual. That was
And
just crazy.
that's also why the net is up at 23, because the margin of victory is going to be factored in there with
Yeah.
32-point loss here.
Yeah, not a very good overall net for Oregon, but Rocco, this might go back to you. Why is Illinois fifth of the net? Well, they went to Oregon and blew them out, right?
That's right. And they played Tennessee to a 2-point game, which isn't bad for the net. They've exploded
That
on
was
a
a
lot of
great game.
teams, and they got another road win today, even though it was close.
Right. Actually, these are the nets heading into today also. The net scores ratings here that we'll see have not been updated. But Rocco, let me stick with you. The number nine overall team, first of our three seeds, there's the Florida Gators finally. Do you agree that they drop all the way down to the three line with that one loss?
Yeah, I'm good with where we have them. I'd probably have them above Oregon, but I would also have a different team we haven't brought up quite yet. But Mississippi State, I have just barely above Florida. Another SEC team, a lot of fun for you, Chad, for bracketing. But I do like the slight edge for Mississippi State over Florida now, and I would actually have both of them over Oregon currently, but it's all very close.
Tytel, do you want to defend Oregon over this Florida and over Mississippi and Mississippi State third on that list?
I think they're all in this range. As Chad mentioned, I think the Ducks, I had the Ducks as a two seed before their impressive win over the Terps today. So I think it does only bolster their resume. But yes, Florida, I mean, when your only loss is by six at Kentucky, certainly has to be in contention as well.
All right, well, what about Mississippi State, though? I mean, they've won at Memphis, who has a lot of good wins. They've only lost one loss, and that was to Butler.
But I see something down in tier two chat, a 10-point loss to a tier two team. Not a lot of teams so far have that, do they?
That might have been our first tier two loss team, actually,
There you
Mississippi State. We haven't seen them quite show up yet. But there they are, number 10 overall, the
go.
very next team showing up in the Midwest region there. But since we just discussed them, Matt, let me bring you back in, and as we bring up number 11 overall, how about Texas A&M? How about we are now up to our seventh SEC team here out of the top
In the
11,
top 11.
which is just utterly ridiculous.
That's what I think. Like, for a snapshot of time now, I think it's pretty accurate. I don't necessarily think it'll be the case when they all beat each other up a little bit. And I do think Auburn and Tennessee are like a half step above everyone. And so for they might win, say, 13, 14 games, and then we'll be talking 11, 12 wins instead of two and threes. I think like they'll be three and four seeds.
What about this A&M team themselves, though? Dorman, I mean, it's a pretty darn impressive resume again, with three tier one wins and all the losses being in tier one as well.
I'm on board this Aggies train. They play defense. They're in your face. They make you do things when you have the ball that you don't want to. They get you out of running your stuff effectively. They get you out of taking good shots, and they're all over. They're hawking the ball. I like this A&M team. I know it's SEC, again, and people are going to get sick of this, but they're incredible. This conference is absolutely awesome, and I have Texas A&M up here and agree with them.
Number 12 overall, though, finishing out our three line here. Griggs, how about UConn, our second Big East team now?
Yeah, a really good team that in I know that our good friend Zach Singer's watching. So they did lose three straight and finished last out in Maui. I want to mention that every episode that we do. But in reality, none of those losses were particularly bad, although Dayton is starting to maybe be a little bit worse than what we thought. And outside of that, they've done enough to land right about here. I was thinking bottom of the third line to, top of the fourth line area. So I don't know if this makes Tytel feel good or not, but I actually kind of agree with this selection. I think he feels better when I don't agree with him.
Oh. I guess the other thing on UConn, they actually struggled at home with Providence most of the game today. It was they were down double digits in the first half, so good thing for them for coming back to winning. Otherwise, there probably would be a strong argument.
I was
maybe.
barely
I
even
will yeah,
following
throw
it because
a
I didn't even
small
think it would.
asterisk on that one is Leah McNeely, they're a real good freshman shooter out today and out probably a couple of weeks. So if you gets a questionable loss or two in the next couple of weeks, he's got a high ankle sprain. That might be why.
Matt, that is a good point, but to a counterpoint that they were playing Providence
At home.
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's a
home game.
rivalry game, and Providence is a little salty over what Marquette did to him on New Year's Eve. So,
Well, we should be thankful there was not a riot in the basketball capital.
who are we up to now? Rocco, how about UCLA coming down the four line here at number 13 overall?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I have to go through the full exercise. Haven't done that yet this season, but I sketched one together Friday night. UCLA was a four seed, so not going to pick it apart. I think they were like 14 or 15 for me, but I'm good with this.
You're good with this. Well, I tell you,
They're a
you
good
gave way
team.
too much agreement here tonight so far from our panel.
Although after I did that, they lost to Nebraska, so they're probably not a four anymore. And we should say they lost a road game at Nebraska. Who It's a good Nebraska team, but it's
It
another
is a good
loss.
number. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, on the counter, Rocco, though, they do have three Tier 1A wins all away from
Yeah.
home. And I
And
think
that
that
win at
that.
Oregon is real
And
good.
two of those should continue to age even better. Gonzaga and Arizona have not played their best basketball yet, in my opinion. And obviously, the road to Oregon is going to hold probably all year. So I agree that they got a lot to anchor with.
And they were a little shorthanded, Tytel, also against that Nebraska game, yes?
Yes, Eric Daly, who's been playing great for them all year, did not miss did miss the game against Nebraska. I don't know if he would have made the difference. He's been playing pretty well. He had 18 against Gonzaga. So I don't know how long he's out for, though.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Dorman, how about Illinois coming in at number 14 overall? We've mentioned them about 10 times already on the show already. I think it's about time we actually see them in the bracket, right?
Yeah, I have them at the bottom of three, top of four, so right about where I have them when I did mine yesterday morning. I like this Illinois team. If you saw them play Tennessee, they had a few careless errors at the very end, cost them a win against the number one team, Tennessee there. They could have won that game at home. They played Alabama well. And then, like everyone said, the other night they went into Oregon, which is a tough place to play, and they absolutely ran them out of the gym. Oregon needs to work on their defense, but I think Illinois is really talented and has a really good team. I think this team is plenty powerful to go on a big time run in March. And I like them. I think the four line's very fair.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the question here was is does it, how what type of a shot does this team have to win the Big Ten? And I think they might. I think I know they've got a couple of Big Ten teams in before them, although it doesn't look like we have Big Ten teams in. We have UCLA and Oregon, and they are Big Ten teams.
I think that if they play the way they did against Oregon the rest of the way, they will have beaten most of Wooden's UCLA teams.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's
They are big enough. They are very tall. They were really long
Yeah,
looking
but I don't
on
expect that. I think
TV
that was an anomaly all the way around.
today.
I think Illinois had its best night in 10 years, maybe. I mean, to beat a protected.
I think they do have the highest ceiling in the Big Ten. I think this
I
team
agree.
could go on a Final Four run.
Yeah.
The other teams, I think, are somewhat limited in comparison.
Yeah. Well, they almost beat Tennessee, and Tennessee's ranked number one and number two on the overall list. So, yeah.
Tytel, here's a bit of an oddity here. Number 15 overall, Kansas. We are used to the Jayhawks being a one or two seed every year, aren't we?
We are, Chad. They've certainly had their stumbles. I certainly wouldn't give up on them, especially after their road trip today to UCF, where they won by 51 points.
That was insane almost.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
They were doing their best UC San Diego impression. Who did that to Fullerton last night? But
Yeah.
I will say There's a team in Kansas's league that has already beaten Kansas in the fog, West Virginia, that I think needs a serious look. They're not very high in the net per se, but their resume numbers are very good. They're like top 12 or 13. Last I checked.
Yeah, they got. I just pulled them up on the right there. They're the 13th SOR. They have those three tier 1A wins as well, with Gonzaga, Arizona, and at Kansas.
And one of their best players, DeVries, the coach's son, is still out with an injury, and they're doing a lot of this damage without him. When he comes back, this team is very good.
Yeah, Javon Small is having an incredible year.
Stalica, number 16 overall, finish up the four line. Not West Virginia, but how about the Zags?
I'm starting to wonder if Gonzaga could have even been a protected seed. You could have argued that a team like West Virginia probably should have been ahead of them. You look at Gonzaga, for example, they're going to be 2-4 against quad one, which is something you would frown upon for a protected seed, and even being 4-4 when you include the top two tiers. That's a little bit borderline. Now, the one thing I would say for Gonzaga going forward, obviously they'll have the two games against St. Mary's, and now you get two games against Washington State that should buoy their numbers up a little bit.
I agree with the last thing you said there, John, and that's a little bit. If we go back to the bracket here, well, first, look at Gonzaga's profile. And then if you go back to the bracket, we've been looking at all of them, and there's a distinct difference paper-wise between Gonzaga and the other 15. The other 15 have more wins in Tier 1 by far than Gonzaga, and not only that, they have way more opportunities than Gonzaga the rest of the way to continue to get more, and I would imagine that's also going to be true about the teams that are a little bit behind them. You know, Tytel put the bracket together. I think that we're all kind of generally agreeing on what they did. Can Gonzaga get any higher than this? Even if they win out, are they going to get any higher than this? Or even if they win out, they might be a little lower.
I agree with both of you. I think they're getting a lot of respect with their name and the schedule they've taken on. I'm with you, Griggs. I'm with you, Stalica. This team's getting props for their name. And every big game they've lost, the Baylor win was opening night. They haven't looked like that since opening night. Most of the rest have been losses.
Yeah, and I like this team. I think their ceiling's high, too. But their paper is not – paper-wise, and I know it's not just the paper, but if it were, paper-wise, they're nowhere near anybody else that we've
seen. Let me get Rocco's feelings, and then I want to get Tytel's reaction as well.
Yeah.
Oh, Chad, I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say, I want to get my feelings out, and then I want to hear from Tytel. Anyway, no, I think there's two trains of thought here, and Tytel can let me know. But it's January 5th, so we're not – I don't even know if we're at the halfway point officially for all the games Gonzaga will play this year. And so a lot of this exercise this early on is potentially projecting. And we saw what happened last year. Gonzaga, all the way until February, was either on the bubble or out. And then all of a sudden they beat Kentucky in February. Then we saw how the committee felt about their seed. And everybody, I think, was a little shocked they got all the way up to a 5. I think what the committee is doing in their case, because they are so dominant in their regular games, we saw them just destroy Loyola Marymount last night as an example. They'll do that a lot in the WCC. They're going to stay like top 5 or 10 in the net. I think they're 7 right now. So once you're in the bracket, it's like, okay, what do you do with Gonzaga? Because they're obviously at a high level, but they've lost these close games. How much does the resume matter? Or how much should we use this, you know, predictive metric stuff to actually seed them? And that's where I think Gonzaga, to Griggs, your question, can get up to a 3 seed. And I want to hear from Tytel.
Tytel.
It will be hard to get up much higher only because they don't have a ton of tier one opportunities. I agree. There's a chance they run the table. I don't think they will, but there is a chance, because there's always a chance because they're the Zags. And if so, teams above them, while there will be chances for tier one wins in those power conferences, there will also be plenty of chances to lose, albeit to good teams. And I think the reason I have them this high, amongst other reasons, is if you look at the tier one losses, overtime, 3 points, 6 points, and none of them were at home. Like, those are 4 good losses. And Chad, as we know, great teams have great losses, right?
I don't have the screen available. Yes,
that's why I thought Iowa State belonged ahead of Auburn.
Yeah, but now there's a couple more tier one opportunities here. The Zags, they're all the road games at St. Mary's, the road game at Washington State, the road game at Oregon State, assuming those games remain tier one, which they are right now, the road game at San Francisco. There are a few chances, but they're not going to be high tier one wins.
Which they get to play in the Chase Center, by the way, which no fun for us Dons fans.
That does complete what we call the protected seed. So from here on out, I'm going to go one full seed line at a time. So I'm going to reveal all four of the five seeds right now. And Matt, let me bring you back in here as we pull them up. And he's got Memphis, Houston, Michigan State, and Oklahoma. Notably, no West Virginia yet. But what about these four teams that he threw up there? In any order you want to take, you hit them.
It's just a combination of are they Houston is a case I think they could be much higher up the bracket by the time we end the year, and Oklahoma might not even be in the bracket altogether. So it's interesting snapshot where we are in January with teams, and then Memphis looks like they're a little steadier this year, so they might stay as a 5 or 6 seed, and then Michigan State quietly actually playing really good basketball right now. But, so it's just kind of like I think Houston's the one I think is going to rise up to a 2 or 3 seed by the time the season's over. Michigan State also might climb up into the protected seed line, and then I think a team that's going to plummet in Oklahoma.
We kind of discussed them the other night. Well, we've been discussing them every week. I love this Memphis profile, but on the court, while they're good and while they're certainly a lot more consistent than what they've been in years prior to this year, at least so far, they still had the loss at Arkansas State. They still had to sweat out their win the day, although they did win it. They have definitely, you don't go to Clemson and win. You don't beat UConn. You don't beat Michigan State, who's also on this line. Ole Miss, also very good. They beat them handily. I mean, they've looked like a really good fourth seed, third, like fifth seed caliber team, but there have been nights where they haven't.
Well, that's the thing. Tytel, let me ask you about the Memphis team also here, because you look at that collection of wins, tier one and two combined. That's as good as anybody has in the nation, two tiers combined, I think. And I know there's the Arkansas State blemish, but I think there's a strong argument. This team, you've got this team should be up higher than this even.
I thought about it. I mean, the strength of schedule is fifth. This is not a power conference team. This is an AAC team, and they're fifth in the country. Credit Coach Hardaway a ton for going out of his way to play, frankly, half the SEC, it seems like. But he beat some of them, and they had a great trip to Maui. And, like, I could hear it's a legit argument, Chad.
Rocco, I gotta go back to the West Virginia. They're still out here on the fifth line. Do you think that that's a mistake at this point?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's hard. You can't, like, there's no wrong answers on January 5th, in my opinion. Like, if you're looking at more projective, then you could say West Virginia doesn't have DeVries. They're going to finish eighth in the Big 12. They'll be happy just to be a tournament team. But I think if you actually go off results, they're probably a 3 seed, actually. So it's an interesting dilemma, with however you want to project it out. But yeah, I would put them in personally, but that's just because half the hosts I do this early on are to give teams credit for earning stuff this early, because you never know, they could fall apart tomorrow. And it is a perfect example.
If we look at teams that might fall apart tomorrow, though, we did see Oklahoma on this line, and as Matt mentioned,
Right.
I think I agree with Matt completely that this team was might have been the second to last undefeated team to lose, and yet may not even make the NCAA tournament at the end of the day with this schedule they had to have ahead of them in the SEC.
Yeah, good luck.
Let's take a look at the sixth line here, though. Dorman, let me bring you back in. We've got, oh, still no West Virginia. Instead, we have Pitt, Baylor, Utah State, and
Country
Purdue.
roads.
I had West Virginia on this line. I have them ahead of Pitt, and I like the Utah State and I like the Purdue, but I'm with Rocco on this. I had West Virginia. If you're looking at what have they done so far this year, West Virginia's resume impresses me more than some of the teams that we've just mentioned.
Yeah, Griggs, he's got a team like a Baylor here. Do you agree with him that Baylor's up here on the sixth line? That they another team with a losing record against the top two quadrants.
I had them a little lower than West Virginia, or yeah, I wouldn't have had Baylor quite this high. To answer your question, there's another team on this line that that is crazy good. I thought he had them higher than most people would, but I actually agree with it. I'll let you, you know who it is, so I'll
Oh,
let you ask who you want about him.
Pretty high stakes. Are you talking about Utah State?
Yeah.
Okay.
This team is so good. And when you look at their profile, it's a really good profile. But when you watch them play, oh my God, is this team good?
Tytel, do you want to comment on both Baylor and on Utah State?
Yes. My Baylor comment is they're actually fortunate. I don't know if people remember that amazing win over St. John's in double overtime when
Oh,
Roach
yeah.
like threw in a 30-footer. Like
Oh,
that is
yeah.
a fine line between like them dropping several seeds down. As far as the Aggies, I want to focus on the loss. That is a 2-point loss in tier two. I understand that some people might think, oh, a tier two loss, you can't cut them any slack. But this is a UC San Diego team that is the nation's second longest active win streak of 11 games in a row. So I see very little shame in being 2 points from perfection against one of the winningest teams in the nation.
Yeah,
One
and
more
I
thing. One more thing on Baylor. If you look at the profile after I just knocked them, I'm going to give them a compliment. Look at those losses. There's two seed one team, right? Not two number one seeds there in Tennessee and Iowa State, Gonzaga and UConn. So as
yeah, but
much as
they
I
also
knocked them, yeah, they lost the games, but the schedule's been rough.
those are four Final Four contenders.
Right. That was my
Yeah,
point.
but they didn't. I mean, look at who they lost to, but look at those games. They weren't competitive in those games.
But I'll throw this out there also.
Right.
Had that miracle shutout gone in, that St. John's game is on the loss column. I
Yeah.
think there's an argument this Baylor doesn't belong in the field right now.
Yeah. I mean,
Sure.
Dude,
They're
yeah,
playing arguable. Yeah.
they'd be 7-5 against D1.
With
Yeah.
one decent win. Yeah.
Yeah. One top two to him.
Yeah.
Anyone want to mention Purdue real quick here before we move on? Or is this pretty much right where they belong here?
Yeah, this feels like that's they belong there now. That's probably right where they'll be in March.
Yeah, they got
I'm a
their
little
first Broad
lower.
win against Minnesota. So.
I'm a little lower on Purdue. I think they're like 8-9 for me right now, but
I think
yeah,
they'll start
obviously the
to
upside's
climb.
there. Yeah,
I
the
agree.
upside's
I
there.
think they'll start to climb as the SEC takes some losses against each other. This is a Purdue team. I think they'll start to climb up slowly, but I think they'll climb up.
All right.
And also lose at home. Yeah.
Salika, I just revealed the seven line. First of all, yes, West Virginia finally in the bracket, along with Wisconsin,
Woo!
Michigan, and Clemson.
Good for Stu, Virginia, but I want to go back two seasons to Houston. Keep in mind, Houston is another team that, much like Gonzaga, we're probably giving them a high seed based on some of their recent performances in the tournament. This year, they don't have the paper. Now, granted, they do have a team that, if you watch them play, can generally dominate some of the lower competition they've been able to beat, but they haven't really had any wins of significance that you'd expect for teams like a five, for example. So seeing West Virginia down on the seven line, I would have a lot more of a problem with.
Yeah. Let me mention a couple other teams here. Well, first of all, you're seeing potential second round matchups show up here. And among the things that we showed up here is a potential UConn-Purdue rematch from last year's championship game in the second round, which that would be pretty neat if that did happen. But how about these two ACC teams that just came in, Pitt and then Clemson? Who have we not spoken to recently? Matt, what are your thoughts on this? Because I'm kind of really suspicious of the entire ACC after Duke this season.
I believe in Pitt. I know that game at Mississippi State is one they want to forget, but you basically take that game out, they've played like a top 15 team all year, and I think we'll continue to play that way. Clemson, I'm a little more suspicious about. That's one. I watched the Kentucky game. They found a way to win that game, even though I felt like Kentucky was well the better team, even in Little John there most of the way. So that's the one. I can see Clemson tumbling. Pitt, I think experienced guards, well, Brownell and Capel probably similar coaches, but I like Pitt's guards, and I think Pitt will be solid in the ACC. Clemson's what I can see. And if they do anything like they did last year, that roller coaster, that might knock them out of the field this year.
Yeah, Tytel, you just don't have the room for bad losses in the ACC because you only get a couple good teams left on the schedule.
You don't believe in the Tar Heels, do you, Chad?
The Tar Heels, I haven't seen them in your field yet, have you?
Not going to for a while, Chad.
Let's take a look at the 8 line here again. Look at some potential second round matchups, and Griggs, I want to bring your attention to the East region potential second round matchup as we reveal the 8 line.
Okay, this is very, very well done.
Duke Maryland potential second round matchup. We're going to make them play each other here. The other team's Nebraska again. Did they play today? No.
No.
Nebraska, Ole Miss, Georgia, and Maryland showed up on this line here.
I really like this Nebraska team. Fred Hoiberg is doing a good job, but he had a good foundation lined up. I think Tim Miles still deserves a lot of this credit. But
okay, let me go somewhere else here. Stalika, what about the likes of Ole Miss and Georgia on this line here as well?
Ole Miss is probably going to be one of the teams that eventually gets eaten up by some of the higher-end teams in the SEC. I think the number 8 seed could be where the Rebels eventually end up. Georgia, I think you could probably say they'd be a number 8 for now, but they're going to have to win some games against some higher-profile teams in the conference just to stay within the top half of the bracket.
Yeah, what you would say about Georgia is that they've gotten some decent wins and they've held serve. I liked the Grand Canyon win when it happened. I don't like it quite as much now. But again, on the 8 line, that's kind of what you get sometimes, is teams that you know, won the tier 3 and up games.
Yeah,
All I'm seeing is a decent win in the singular here, not plural.
Yeah, I've got a feeling Georgia might be going along with Oklahoma, Matt, down to the not in the field.
Yeah, that's one that I was like kind of mapping out in my head last night, and they had them like right just in or just out, which is actually the same where I had Oklahoma, just in or just out.
Yeah, there's Ole Miss there as well. Quick note here, you see potential Tennessee Ole Miss second round game that is permissible under the current rules as long as they only play once and during the regular season, which is all they are slated to play. Should those two teams be in the conference tournament, that would become an impermissible game and some type of bracketing movement would have to take place.
Yeah, and you can't switch them with Maryland.
Because we'd have to switch them with Nebraska or Georgia. Yes, we definitely have to keep Duke Maryland there.
Yeah.
Now, as we go to the 9 line, we actually see some potential first round matchups here. And Rocco, let me bring you back in with these 4 teams. Nebraska gets Dayton, Ole Miss gets Cincinnati, Georgia gets San Diego State, and Maryland gets St. John's. Salika's giving a thumbs down to Cincinnati's inclusion, but your thoughts on these 4 teams here?
Yeah, I think I'm with Stalika. I don't know where Cincinnati stands after a home loss yesterday. Obviously not a bad team they lost to, but they were already kind of hurting with their Villanova loss and just a lot of bad net games in their win total. So it's hard to know.
Hold them up.
Dayton obviously got blown out by George Washington yesterday. But I do like how they performed in Maui. So I think they're fine to hang on for today. I think, you know, Maryland's the team that was, they were an 8 on here, but, I don't know that they belong at all. They are a very impressive, talented team. Derek Queen's amazing, blah, 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 but they haven't beaten anybody really besides Ohio State. And, at one point went over Villanova, I guess, but, their substance is not good. And they just got swept by the Northwest schools. So rough start to Big Ten play. And, the St. John's thing, I do think St. John's is getting, and Matt will probably back me up, I think they're going to get better and better and be in the hunt for the Big East race. So that I think they'll, if you're just projecting out for St. John's, I'm good with that.
And I'm feeling like that's 8-9 about where they're going to end up to right now.
It's like the old Chris Mullen team at the end. Steve Lavin.
Tell me, ask you, for his profile like St. John's here, who is beat nobody, but their losses were all to good teams. Is that a projection out more type of thing when you're looking ahead to their schedule? Because what would they be? They'd be in Providence? I mean.
Yes, not impressive on the left side, but very impressive in the middle. OAR of 30 sounds like it's an 8-9-ish team. Strength of schedule is meh. So, yes, I think that it's more of a looking forward than looking back. And can you imagine, like, if St. John's Georgetown becomes like a bubble game for the freaking Big East.
That would be awesome.
I will say, Maryland St. John's, if you told me that, I see that matchup in the 8-9 game in March. That's like, I feel like that feels very prescient to me.
Chad, can I ask you a question since you were the first team to really raise a red flag on this team? When you're looking forward at Cincinnati, do you see them falling way, way back? They lost to a team at home. The Tytel doesn't even I don't think he – I don't know if the Arizona is going to make his field or not. But none of the – I just get the sense that most of their remaining games, if not all of them, are harder than any of the games that they've played previous. And the win against Dayton was okay, but that's all it really was. I just am not impressed with them.
I'm not convinced that they win another game until March 5th right here, because that's the next game that I see on their schedule that I think is is winnable. And that's now, I think they will win some of these games, obviously, especially
Utah
the home games.
At home, yeah, yeah, they can probably win that one.
Utah at home, well, BYU's been a little disappointing so far.
But this is you can only go with what's happened so far. I just don't think they're that good. And as good as I thought Dayton was, I had made one of my final thoughts that I thought that they could end up as a protected seed. Protected seeds do not play like the way they did against GW. Oh, my God, did they get blown out.
Yeah, I will say this for Cincinnati, though. If their crappy football team could beat Arizona State at home, I think their somewhat mediocre basketball team could probably do likewise and put a smile on Tytel's face.
What? Happened
I think, yeah, I mean, in Cincinnati's defense, they're seventh nationally in adjusted defense. They have one of the best rim protectors in the Z's, Ben Diago, and Dylan Mitchell's one of the best steal guys. So if they do it, they're going to do it with really good defense. And I can't write off of a good defensive team like this.
Yeah, the metrics, the predictive metrics do still like the Cincinnati team. So we'll give a shot here. But let's take a look at the 10 line. And Dorman. We've got Ohio State going up against Clemson, North Carolina against Michigan, Penn State against West Virginia, and Vanderbilt. And how about Vanderbilt making the field here after what they did to LSU yesterday?
Wow. I did not have Vanderbilt this high. In Cleveland in the West region, we have the backyard brawl, Michigan, Carolina, championship rematch. I'm not as high on most as Ohio State. I know they got a good win. I don't know. When I watch them play, there's just something missing. And I feel if there's a Big Ten team that is going to fall out in the next few weeks go down in the bracket and maybe not find the bracket, it's Ohio State. They got some tough games coming up, Oregon, Wisconsin, Indiana, Purdue. I don't know. I know that Kentucky was a good game. That was impressive. Texas, I'm not sure how good Texas is, and that's really all they have. So we'll see. I'm down on Ohio State.
Down on Ohio State. Penn State, notably on this line, was before the Indiana home loss today.
Rough loss. Big loss. Bad loss.
And even that comes with a little bit of a caveat because the home game was actually played at the Palestra. It wasn't in State College.
Yeah.
Correct.
That was their choice.
Yeah, it was.
Real quick, let's talk about the other two teams here, though. Rocco, how about the Vanderbilt Commodores in the field here? They've only got one loss. I can't argue with only one loss. Can you?
I can't. And I like Vandy a lot. Like I've liked them all year. Their only loss is Drake. I thought that was a well-played game. And obviously Drake stumbled here in the last week or two. But in that particular week, you know, they both gained a ton of confidence, both those teams. And then they go to TCU. That game was in, I believe, Dickey's Arena, so almost a road game. Win that one by 9. They've been very dominant in all these bye games, much like the rest of their league has. They went to Virginia Tech, a bad team, but they won big. I like a lot of their pieces as a basketball team. But again, they're going to be in there with the Oklahomas, the Georgias, in the middle of that league. And I think by the end of the day, you're only going to get up to 11 bids total. I'll save that mantra for the end of the show, but if they can get in there, I think they're good enough to do it. It's just they're gonna have to win a lot of tight games in this league.
And Tytel, you had North Carolina on this slide. You mentioned them earlier. I want to give you a chance to now tell us why they even belong in the field right now. There are a lot of losses on that profile,
and there's a win over UCLA by 2 points, which is staking their claim as their signature win. And it's going to stay that way, I think, for a while. Yeah, not the best season. They've had some injuries, I believe, with Seth Trimble. And obviously, when all your losses are to tier one teams, that's certainly nothing to lose sleep over. But even some of the predictive metrics don't love them. So I think they are going to be on life support all year long.
Do you think so? Like, I can't. I suspect that they're better than what their paper shows, because when you look at their losses, they were competitive against Florida. You know, maybe not so. I mean, competitive at Kansas. They played really well there. They lost in overtime to Michigan. Yeah, there's a couple that you would expect a top 10 team to be able to win, particularly Louisville and some of the other ones. But it's not like they dropped games to teams outside of maybe Louisville that were way down the seed list or not in there at all. And I think they're going to start stringing together wins simply because when you look at their next one, two, three, four, five, six, they're all winnable. Now, if they don't get the next six, like all of them, then I'm going to be worried, but I think they will.
All right. I
I
mean,
would
you can't.
respond. Go ahead,
Go
Jeff.
ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would respond that it's a different year. Like, you're used to seeing Carolina as a perennial top 25 team. Last year, they were sixth in defensive efficiency. This year, as you see, they're 60th. Like, that's a huge drop off.
No Armando Bacot.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks here. But Matt, let me show you the 11 line here. I'm only going to show you two teams on the 11 line, though. The rest, because these are our last two teams that avoided the first four: Louisville and Arkansas.
Oh.
Wow.
Right
I
or
told
wrong?
Matt, I wanted I Luke, because I cheated a little bit. I looked at the bracket, I had time to get some notes in. I wanted to argue Louisville real bad, but their profile actually isn't all that bad at all. Like, they're 40th in the net. They have a decent Q1, Q2 combined. Like, it's one of those a team that basically belongs as an 11 seed. They're 5-5 in the top two quadrants. And then you see the OAR 41, that's right there. I mean, not only the strength of the record 50, but I think strength of the record personally is kind of a junk. It's like the one, take that off and actually wins over bubble. Like, it's gonna be on their team sheet, and like I'd basically ignore strength of the record. So, and there you go, wins a bubble 33. So that's right, eight. That's actually a little higher than 11. But I think overall, this is a perfect 11 seed. Like.
Like, I find a little funny you say you lose our strength of record, because I think, Rocco, you've pointed out in the past year that the strength of record correlates a lot to some of the final brackets that we see,
Yeah,
does
I love that metric, really.
it not? I mean, after you go through like 17, 18 pieces of data, and if you're still stuck and you need a source of truth, that's proven to be over these last few committees, the source of truth. So yeah, that's why I lean on it more. Again, it's more about them than me, but yeah, and I think that's a complicated subject right now because again, we're so premature. It's
What
like,
don't you like about strength of? I love strength of record. I
no,
love the
I love.
concept of it. Yeah.
I like the concept of it. I think the execution of it's awful.
Well, I mean, we're still less than halfway through.
Wins above bubble should assist that too. But I think,
Yeah.
yeah, I think with Arkansas's case, you know,
Get them up here.
they're coming into the SEC with two out of conference losses instead of Vanderbilt's one. I think that's going to just re require them to go 8-10, I guess. I don't think they can get away with a 7-11 season. And this is now Tytel, I've been counting, is 12th SEC team. So I don't see the math where 12 can get in. And maybe that was just an accident because Arkansas is better than most of the other options on a head-to-head. But I do think this league's going to get squeezed at 11.
You may need to keep counting here, Rocco. We still have four
Yeah.
more teams to go.
I know. I know. But I'm just saying, once they play all their games, unless we have like a COVID thing, knock on wood, as long as all these games get played, I don't know if the math will work to get 12 teams in. That's all.
And let's start over here in the South region. Pitt's first round opponent will be the winner of a game between yet another SEC team, Texas and St. Mary's. So there's number 13 for you on the SEC. Wow.
Wow.
Griggs, what about that? Texas and St. Mary's both making the field barely.
Barely. I like this St. Mary's team. I think that I know that outside of Gonzaga and maybe San Francisco, they're in Wazoo, they have limited opportunities, but I think they have enough and they'll win enough to avoid the first four. So I like that he selected them and just didn't leave them out. Texas is a good team. That's got a lot of teams that I think that are better than them on their schedule the rest of the way. And because of that, I wonder if they're just They say that they factor that in, and like it's good to play a tough schedule, but at the end of the day, if you're going to be losing the vast majority of them, I just don't think they get enough overall wins to make it in the end. But for now, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and a nice easy week for Texas this week. Just the top two teams of the nation, back to
But
back.
they're at, yeah.
That's it.
Just back. Oh, they are at
Right.
home
I
though.
think,
So they
yeah,
good.
Texas is one we looked at on the show earlier in the week that I think they would actually need to go because they had such a soft non-conference. I think they would actually need to go 9-9 in this league.
Yeah, 278 non-conference strength. The schedule is pretty darn weak.
Yeah.
Let me go here. Stalika. The very last two teams that made Tytel's field, also on the 11 line here, Purdue's potential opponent, SMU and Arizona State.
Ooh,
Well,
nice.
SMU was doing, they were looking like a team that was basically non-offensive going into the Duke game, and then Duke completely exposed all of SMU flaws in 140 minute span. So probably not going to be a bubble team if that were to have been taken into consideration fully. Arizona State, they do have the nice neutral court win against St. Mary's. And then a couple other meh wins after that. They're probably not going to win at Kansas because I don't see the Jayhawks losing two in a row at the Fog. But you look at their upcoming games against Baylor, UCF, winnable road trip to UC and West Virginia. They could pick off one of those games, then sure, they could probably argue that they're a bubble team.
Yeah, Duke exposed all of SMU's flaws and then created new ones that no one had ever known existed before. Good God.
Well, SMU's good news is they're not going to play Duke again until possibly the ACC tournament. So, but the bad
Don't
news
know
is
if
they
it's
don't
good
really
news.
have any quality opponents left on their schedule either. That's
We looked at their schedule, Chad, and SMU plays the top four ACC teams once each, so they only get one crack at each. I don't think that's a good thing.
And
It's
at North
not.
Carolina is your next game, so that's going to be it.
Yeah.
You're gonna have a Pitt and a Louisville and a Clemson games at some point here, but that's oof.
Yeah, one crack at each. Yeah.
Tytel, your top four teams out, just missed out were Arizona. You put Arizona State in, left Arizona out. I just got to make that
And
comment.
that could have been a first for
Am I
you.
ill? Yes.
Missouri, St. Bonaventure, and
Reverse
UCF.
psychology. Yeah.
Good,
Yes,
Tytel.
Chad. I think that UCF will be dropping off after their 51-point home loss. The Bonnies are legit. I almost put them in. I almost left my Wildcats off, but I was really impressed that they didn't blow it at Cincinnati because it looked like they were going to, and then just somehow they hung on for dear life. But God, they are painful to watch. They don't have any sense of the fundamentals, and they're a bad three-point shooting team. And my boy Crevis is still hurt. Like they're going to be a bubble team all year long, and I have a bad feeling it's not going to work out. Which, after our horrendous football season, will only be the necessary icing on that disgusting cake we need in Tucson.
Tytel, you can watch my team. They're a great three-point shooting team, but they just can't win when it matters.
You know, Tytel, I think you're too stuck from the old forest in the trees. Not only does Arizona get in, they're wearing white in the first round.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at those predictives. Look at those predictives.
They're great.
A BPI of 8, that is an incredible number. That tells you that they have lost a lot of games that they should have won.
I think that's going to
Impressively.
reverse as the season goes on.
Yeah. And then the luck factor of 347. Very unlucky.
But Dorman, what about Missouri, who's also on that list of four teams? I mean, this team, that's, you know, there's nothing bad there in the profile and a win over Kansas.
Yeah, Kansas is not what we are accustomed to with Kansas. So besides that, I need to go down to tier three to find a win against Cal and Jacksonville State. Auburn, obviously nothing wrong with that loss. I'm with Tytel. I do not have Missouri in as of today, and they got some people to get a jump over before they're in my bracket. So they are not in today.
I'm going to throw up another group of teams here. These are not from Tytel. I actually put a list of nine other teams that I personally think are close, and you guys can disagree here, but nine more teams that did not make that list in no particular order: Indiana, Iowa, Northwestern, BYU, Georgetown, Villanova, Texas Tech, Washington State, UC Irvine. I had to throw them in for Griggs. What about some of these teams? Do kind of throw this out here for anybody here. Did any of these teams maybe belong in the field versus over one of the teams that Tytel selected?
Indiana certainly took a step in the right direction today with what will be counted as a road win at Penn State. They hadn't really won anything of significance until today. Their only other win that was in the top two tiers was down in Atlantis against a Providence team that's been floundering considerably.
I think a team we'll be talking about in a month or two, Creighton.
Okay, Creighton, not even on that board.
No, and not deserving of being on the board yet, but just so I believe we'll be speaking out soon.
I think the puppet's been muted again.
Yeah, I like that you included UC Irvine, Chad. I think you're assuming UC San Diego is the Big West champion then?
Yes, assuming UC San Diego is the Big West champion. I just think that this Irvine team – well, let me put two Big West profiles up here. We'll go a little under the radar as we try to get the puppets we've definitely lost him. UC San Diego, UC Irvine. I mean, Rocco, aren't these both pretty darn close to a shot at a two big West here?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
UC San Diego, with that win at Utah State, they've got more on the bone already than some of the teams that made it today. And then on the left, Irvine's playing a really key guy down, and they're still holding strong. Got a big blowout last night over Riverside. I think UC San Diego's the one because of the Utah State win that can really make it to the finish line. But again, the Big West is tough, and the chances are pretty good they'll have a bad week. But anyway, great story. The other team I was going to mention is New Mexico. They do have the UCLA win. They beat Nevada on Friday in a miracle buzzer beater. I was there when they beat VCU. They've got some nice wins.
Yeah, and we just ignore that New Mexico State game.
But yeah, you're going to have to. The good just has to outweigh the bad.
A team. Let's pull up Northwestern real quick. I know we're going to talk about them on Monday as well. This is just fascinating that when you look at the Iowa loss, I think that there was a questionable call at the end of that game that gave Iowa the ball on the last possession, and then they drained a three. And then there was something there was just no question at all. It was just outright awful officiating that basically cost them the win at Penn State. It was almost comical. It was so bad. Imagine had they won those two games. I would think they'd be way in the field, but probably inside the bubble, like 10 line or better, wouldn't you think?
I would think so too.
Matt,
I pulled up Georgetown on the right there. Yeah. At Marquette, I don't think it's going to happen, but if it does, a couple nights from now.
They'd be real close. That 329 non-conference six schedule is a hindrance, fairly significant, but like if they won that game, they'd be really close. But there's another, actually, while we're on the thought, another Big East to talk about that I am shocked we are, but Villanova. Yeah.
I put them on there on purpose. I wanted to bring this up. Go ahead.
They have the highest efficiency margins in right now ahead of Marquette in just Big East play. I mean, it's only a 4-game sample, but like they have been playing super in the Big East. Now, the Cincinnati win that looked a whole lot better a couple of weeks ago is now into Q2, but like there's a team that like puts a. If they still think maybe Jay Wright is secretly coaching them now, if that's the case, and they keep this up, they can put up a Big East record that will even put them in the field.
Yeah, there after what they did in November, we gave everyone wrote this team off. But I'm with you, Matt. They're creeping near this discussion suddenly. Go ahead, Salika.
There is a bit of a conundrum with Villanova. They are a top 10 team if you go by adjusted offense. Of course, that also comes with a 346 tempo where they're going to try to keep the game down into the 60s and hold you to the 50s, which you might be able to do in the Big East about 60 to 70% of the time successfully.
Let's quickly go through the rest of the bracket here. These are all the rest of these are single bid under the radar conferences. You can check out our under the radar shows on Wednesday nights for more info on a lot of these teams. But on Tytel on Years 12 Live, we include that UC San Diego team that we just discussed, along with Drake, Liberty, and Samford was his pick to win the SoCon.
Oh, yeah, Buckyball. Buckyball.
Buckyball. On the 13 line, he had McNeese, Columbia, Arkansas State, and the Grand Canyon Antelopes going up against Gonzaga there in the 4-13 game.
Yeah, that a conference rivalry that never will be.
Columbia's gonna have to learn how to play some defense if they want to make it.
I don't know about Columbia holding on there. I think Princeton may take them in the draft.
I know it. I know it
It'd be a
makes you
great
sick,
story.
Tytel, to put Princeton in, but I think Princeton is the team.
This 14 line.
I'll go Yale. I'll go Yale.
The 14 line with Lipscomb, Charleston, Kansas City, a little surprising pick out of the Summit League, but that league has kind of got thrown upside down this weekend. And Kent State as the MAC champion, they're going up against UConn.
Kent State
15.
lost to Ball State.
Yeah. A lot of these teams had bad weeks, actually.
Yeah, they did. A real bad week for some of the under the radar schools.
15 line, Northern Colorado, UMass Lowell, High Point, and Milwaukee. And finally, on the 16 line, we've got the winner of a Holy Cross Marist game going up against Auburn. We got Central Connecticut. We got the winner of a Little Rock Southern game taking on Iowa State. And Norfolk State, the MEAC champion, avoiding the first four there, getting game against Duke. That's the bracket, though. Tytel, let me start with you. Any other thoughts about what you did here or what our discussion was? Or did we change your mind about any teams even, maybe?
I was interested to hear that everybody is so high on West Virginia. I've been kind of thinking they're a fraud, but if everybody else thinks they're not, then I guess I will start to believe. And obviously, the win against Arizona looks better and better by the week. As far as the bracketing, I love what you did in the East Chat in terms of the possible UConn-Purdue title game rematch, and then the winner possibly playing Alabama in a Final Four rematch. Maybe we can invite NC State to like do a scrimmage that week just to pull it out
Yeah.
completely. Who knows?
All right, let me ask the rest of you for any of their final thoughts on everything here. Stalika?
Well, I was going to hit on one of the things that Tytel had posted in the chat here. He talks about Kansas City potentially going to Wichita being a dangerous matchup. That's over 100 miles away, so we're not looking at any home court disadvantage right here. Now, if you wanted to talk about Milwaukee, for example, they could conceivably play at the Fiserv Forum, but that would be a home court disadvantage when you look at potential seeds there. So you probably would not see that matchup come to fruition.
Yeah, Milwaukee would have to hit the 11 line to be able to play in Milwaukee, technically.
Or they could drop down, or they could be a 14 seed against Florida, conceivably. But for the reasons I mentioned, you would not see that happen.
Exactly. Dorman.
Yeah, this has been brought up and discussed, and I think we're going to hear it all year long with the SEC. They're going to play 18 conference games this season. And I'm just wondering where that line is where you're going to get in. Can you go 6-12 and get in? If you had a strong out of conference, 7-11, probably right where the line is. It's going to be interesting all year, based on the unbalanced schedules and how many victories, how many wins are you going to get in the SEC and how are they going to rank them? So I think it's going to be a fascinating situation with the bracket and the rundowns each week on the SEC and where they stand in the records, in conference versus the bracket.
I would just throw in there, we didn't really pay much attention to it because there weren't a ton of teams from the conference in the top 16 teams. There were 11 Big Ten teams in here as well, by the way. I mean, there are only a couple teams behind the SEC, but they just all seem to fall in that, 6 to 11 seed range as opposed to the 1 to 4 seed range. But Rocco, I know you have some thoughts on that also. Let me go to you next for your final thoughts.
Yeah, thanks, Chad. I don't want to sound like the bid police because I'm not, but I will say the sheer math, assuming all these games get played as scheduled, we'll probably limit the league to 11. There's not many scenarios where 12 could find a way. I think in Dorman's case, his points are very valid. I don't see any path for any 6-12s to get in. At 7-11, you need a strong non-conference still, or at least a decent non-conference. And then I think from 8 and 10 and on up, you'll probably see a lot of those teams happy on Selection Sunday, but it's a fine line, and those games are going to come down to margins. I think we're going to start to see, those teams we talked to the very about at the very start of the show. I feel like all of them are very strong, and they could really embarrass some of those middle of the pack teams, like Oklahoma found out. But I think on the flip side, instead of like trying to limit the SEC, I will say they've done so much good work. I really can't see them getting any less than 9. And even that would take a little bit of a letdown from the league standpoint. So I would put the range 9 to 11 and feel very safe that they're going to get 10. That's really crazy to say on January 5th, but that's where we are. And I think there's a downside nationally to that, because what we're looking at in front of us, Chad, is a big board with a projected 68 teams, with a one bid American Conference, a one bid Atlantic 10, a 1.5 bid WCC, a 2 bid Mountain West. There's the heart and soul, the beef, the middle of the sandwich in the sport completely evaporated because the SEC, the NIL money's too strong. They got all the talent there, and the Big 10 and the Big 12 are next. So we're really getting a famine for the great stories, the schools, the underdogs. That I think that's the sad part of all this.
You even look at a situation where the ACC, I think we put 4 teams in from the ACC.
Right.
Or 5 actually. SMU, 4.5, I guess you want to count SMU as the half. Yep. That's less than what the Mountain West got last year. I mean, it's.
Yeah. I hope the Mountain West had fun last year. That might be the last time.
Matt.
I will say, I think Rocco is painting a very realistic story. However, I've got one hope for this. I think the WAB stat is going to help some mid-majors, and it might creep in a UC San Diego. It might creep in a Drake, although Drake, don't be losing at home to Murray State. We got to get that change back.
0-2 in the league now. Loyola, yeah. They also lost to UIC.
But I think we might need Bradley now, Matt.
I think Bradley is, yeah.
And that, but say Drake goes and wins it somewhere like Bradley to make up for this.
Right.
And therefore, I think wins over Bubble, and that is going to really help them to where, like, they'll see, like, hey, that might be Bradley's only home loss. So this is a little bit of a Grig special on that, but, like, that might be Bradley's only home loss if Drake wins there, and all of a sudden comes Selection Sunday and their wins above Bubble might be, like, 30, and there you go. That might sneak them in. Or, like, if UC San Diego does basically what they should, they win at Irvine, maybe only lose one or two other times in Big West play. There you go. They might just be in there with the WAB. And hey, that, especially when you introduce a new stat, I'm thinking you're going to want to give some credence to it in year one.
Yeah, I'll throw in the Conference USA champion, Liberty or Louisiana Tech, in that same discussion. Although all these teams keep losing games that they shouldn't be losing, so that doesn't help. Greg, do you want to finish out the show?
Yeah. Rocco painted sort of an interesting picture and scenario, and it's looking that way, at least the way it is now. It's just the teams from the other regular multi-bid leagues, the West Coast, the A-10, the Mountain West, and of course the American, not getting as many bids as what we've seen. Maybe, you know, most of those leagues, only one or two teams inside the bubble at all. Not to echo what he said, but like the A-10 in particular, it seemed like you had VCU, you had Dayton, you had Rhodey, St. Bonaventure, another one. These teams that came out with these bloated records, but they didn't do it against anybody substantial other than Dayton, who did go out and play. And Dayton, not the best week for them either. So, yeah, where are those teams and those stories going to come from? Because I think, like, as a fan of the sport, that's some of the most fun, at least for us. But one of the teams, this UC San Diego team, Tytel didn't have them in. He's better at guessing the committee than I do. Like, one of my gripes is that I think a team like that belongs in. He had them in, but it's the auto bid. He didn't have them inside the bubble. Like, they went to Utah State and won. They've got an amazing profile. They almost won at San Diego State. And this is a team that, if they continue to blow through the Big West, should be selected and should be placed inside the bubble, in my opinion. Not only would their paper warrant it, I just think that, like, how would you like to be the 5 seed that gets them? Holy crap.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, I guess on that note, I'll go ahead and pull this down here. If you want to check out the final bracket, we will post it underneath the podcast here. But if we get everyone on the screen here, I do want to thank everyone for joining us. On behalf of David Dorman, Matt Zukowski, John Tytel in the center square, David Griggs, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, John Stalica, I'm Chad Sherwood. We'll be back Monday night, tomorrow night, with our regular Hoops HD report, and we'll have another Under the Radar on Wednesday and another Bracket Rundown next Sunday night. Different format next week. We'll figure that out about 10 minutes before we start the show. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll talk to you again real soon.